Today's program is brought to you by the Museum of Food and Drink, sparking curiosity about food with exhibits you can eat. For more information, visit mofad.org.
Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. We are a member-supported, nonprofit food radio station. That means that every single thing we do, from broadcasting 35 weekly shows for free, to bringing you exclusive content from sold-out food events across the country, to offering scholarships to high school students, is only possible thanks to the support of our loyal members. And we want you to join the club. Become a member during our 2017 summer drive to get access to sweet swag and pledge your support to the world's only food radio station. Visit heritageradionetwork.org/donate to become a member now.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues that send. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
What's up, Souther?
Dude, it's been weeks.
It's been a couple weeks,
You've
man.
You've been globe-trotting.
Well, dude, I learned it from watching you.
That was Italy.
It was great, man. Italy is fucking chill as shit.
Yeah, they have clocks.
One's in a hurry.
They have clocks, but they don't really give
a shit
about
them.
Man.
But you know what? I brought you something.
I see that.
Yeah, I just put it right in front of you.
I've never even heard of it.
Galeado.
Gagliardo, bitter radicale.
Radicale.
So it's radical bitter? Oh, it's radicale.
Radicale.
All right.
Yeah, I'm fluent in Italian.
Now, after being there for 3 days. Way to go.
Yeah, man, it was a trip, man. I got to meet a lot of really amazing bartenders out there and see some like really cool cocktail bars and stuff. Like there's Rasputin. I did a guest shift at a place called Locale. Got to meet at this place called Gili, which has been around since 1733.
So it's a new place.
It's newish in Florence.
Yeah, hot on the scene.
Yeah. Signore Luca Pici.
Uh-huh.
He's the guy who wrote the book on Negronis.
Oh, rad.
On the Negroni cocktail and on Count Negroni.
Amazing.
And I bothered him pretty much every night and made him,
made him tell you the secrets to the Negroni.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, it was really cool, man. Really chill. How was last week, man?
It was great.
Listen to the show. Sounded good.
Yeah, man. Well, you were doing your guest shift at that time, right?
Yeah, I was.
Yeah, because you texted me.
Actually,
because I didn't know you weren't coming in until I got here.
Really?
I don't know, man. I got an email. I just don't pay attention to it. Similar to the clocks in Italy.
Oh, exactly, man. Well, I brought you this bottle of it's Gagliardo. It's their bitter radicale. I also have a bottle of their Fernet. They are really cool people. They partner with us in Brooklyn Gin to do some cocktailing out in Florence, Italy. It was awesome, man. Can't wait to go back. Going back in January.
Good for you.
It's going to be amazing.
And you're so stylish. You're in Vogue all the time.
I got in Vogue, man.
Oh, actually, the Vogue, the magazine. You're actually in it. I know. I saw it. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's crazy, man.
Prettiest man I ever saw.
Dude, I was hiding behind a beard, as I always do.
Yes, indeed. Well, in the studio today.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Let's talk about there's people in here with us. our guest today is Tanya Guffey of Dram, formerly, because it just ended this past weekend, right?
Yep.
Your time there, 7.5 years.
Whew.
Welcome to the
Damn,
studio.
That's a long run, man.
It's pretty long, I think, for our industry, anyway.
Yeah. Oh, sure, absolutely.
And pretty long for a bar to exist and prosper, which is very exciting.
That, yeah,
you know it is. It's not closed by any means. It's doing great. So
yeah, you just decided to jump ship,
right? Well,
literally because there's a boat above
there
the
is
bar.
A boat.
Jump kayak.
Yeah,
and then kind of silently in the room, we got Charlie Parker in from Texas, and I'm gonna butcher the name of your bar. What's the name of it again?
It's Asanare Mexican Restaurant.
Asanare. It means to dine, to eat. Yeah. Cool. And you just did a guest shift at Coup the other night. We had a great time.
Great time.
Made some mezcal cocktails. Fantastic. For charity. Absolutely. And then he just wanted to hang out and see the show.
Cool, man. Welcome. Thank you. Welcome, everyone.
So we're going to talk to Tanya about your...
Tanya, I've known you for a really fucking long
fuck
time.
Fuck you, man. It's true. I feel like, it's kind of, as you get older...
And this is your first time on the show.
Embarrassing to realize how long you've known people for. But, yeah, we've definitely, I mean...
I've known you since, like, 2008 or something.
Yeah, it's been 2000 and late. A long run. And you've never invited me to your show.
Whatever,
so
man. It's so cool. It's so cool. We're here now, so...
Just kidding. No, he hasn't... I mean, you have invited me, I feel like. We've been drunkenly...
What,
fucked
us?
Up on Fernet, no, and there's definitely been talk of it, but we're both so busy.
So busy.
Anyway, thank you for having me.
Yeah, great to have you.
Super stoked to have you on. I've asked you to be on the show a few times. It finally worked out.
My mom said you got to keep them waiting. You know.
All right. Okay. Don't give anything
away.
My
mom says I have a face for radio. Yeah,
she's right. So let's talk about your career in this field. Where'd you get started?
Okay. Well, so
when I met you, you were doing like cocktail pop-ups at Bushwick Country Club.
Oh, well, Tom, that was Tom. Yeah. That was Tom's thing. And he, graciously let me come sling cinnamon syrup with him a couple times. But while I was doing that, I was still running a bar called Counter. I was managing the bar there with Frankie Cocktails.
By the way, just to clear the air, like a lot of people are like, why the fuck do you get to be called Frankie Cocktails? The reason why he's called Frankie Cocktails...
Because he gave himself that nickname.
No.
Just kidding. No, it's not. He didn't.
I hired him at Prime Meats way back in the day. He's one of the first hires, and it's owned by the Franks, who own Frankie's Puntino.
There were two
different Franks, and they were like, you can't hire this guy.
Because his name's Frank.
His name's Frank. There's too many Franks. And they're like, well, let's call him Frankie Mustache. I was like, that sounds so shitty.
It's appropriate.
It was actually, in hindsight, like...
Probably not. Really, it was probably less douchey than Frankie Cocktails, right?
Call him Frankie Cocktails. And so...
Or Cocky Frank Tails, as we appropriated it. But it's not. Oh, we love him.
We love him dearly.
But you guys were all like slinging drinks at Bushwick Country Club, making... how many fucking picklebacks did you make?
I mean,
you guys were doing cocktails, but
Bushwick Country Club,
home of the pickleback, like the home of the original pickleback.
Yeah. The home.
Thanks, Reggie.
I've technically only been a bar employee there for like 4.5 years, so not really that long. I'm not near the senior level there yet. Working on it.
But, I like how you said yet.
yeah, I'm gonna kill the rest of them, so.
That's how you climb the ladder.
Yeah,
to BCC.
But Counter, I would say, for if I was attributing my first kind of delve into actual cocktails, would have been Counter, which was an organic bar that existed in the East Village, that's no longer there, on Second Avenue between 6th and 7th. I'll mostly credit Tile Bar on that corner for having chartreuse for $6.
Seven now.
Like a 3.5 ounce pour.
It's still 3.5 ounces, but it's $7.
But it's $7 now for inspiration. But I started, like most people start in a chain restaurant. At 18, I started bartending at P.F. Chang's. Before that, I had been a lounge server, it was called, which is basically a bartender without any of the glory or the tips.
Or the tips,
mostly. And legally, I don't think you can tend bar until you're 18 in Florida. So,
sure.
Never tasted a drink before then.
Never.
It's a radio, Tommy. They can't see you doing the air quotes.
Oh, sorry. It's true.
These
I'll
guys
do that
in
a
the
lot,
dining
probably.
Room might be able to see.
So that was kind of my start, and then I started working in clubs, nightclubs, and. Dive bars in Orlando, and then I moved here and couldn't get a job because you need New York City experience.
So you did what we all do. You lied.
Yeah.
I did, right. I waited because I didn't know you could lie. And then, after like eight, somehow you don't need experience to like be a general manager of like a restaurant, which is what I did when I first got here. Terribly. Like, it was the worst manager probably ever. I remember I had to like make one of the cooks I didn't know what to do. There was like a mouse that had to be like drowned, and it was like a terrible thing. And I'll like never be in management again because it was like that was very scarring on that.
Welcome to New York.
He was like 30 years older than me, and I had to like tell him to go drown this mouse. It was awful. It was like
drown the mouse.
Drown the mouse.
That was the main way to get rid of it.
Yeah, it was.
It reminded me of like awful. Charlie and It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
It was so Charlie.
It was like bat.
Yeah, his rat stick.
Yeah.
Oh my god. I wish it was as fun as Patty's, but. So that I left pretty quickly, which is so weird because I ran into a guy recently at the bar that I'm working at now, from that was one of my employees, and I ran into him like 2 days ago, and it like caught me completely off guard.
Did he remember you?
Yeah. Oh, he was like,
"You made me drown a rat."
Oh my god. It wasn't him. He was, he was white. No,
okay. Different dude.
It was a different guy. Anyway,
drowning rats.
Drowning rats. So anyway, I left the management world and went back to bartending. I started working at a hotel bar for a little bit. And then I decided that I didn't have to commute that far if I just lied on my resume and said I had a ton of experience. And I started working at bars in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Some notable dives there. And then Counter came in about 2007.
And you had a lot of freedom there. You got to do some cool stuff, right? Because it was sort of cutting edge, organic at that time.
Counter was crazy because it was a vegetarian wine bar focused on biodynamic and organic wine, but also spread into the spirits. So she wanted to have an all organic beverage program. This was a woman named Deborah. She was very cool. I'm sure she still is. But she just had a lot of like really cool forward thinking ideas that maybe at the time were kind of outrageous because who's going to, you know, buy a bottle of DRC, you know, Domaine de la Romanée Conti to pair it with, you know, like a tofu steak. But it was ambitious nowadays. Well, I think
right.
That's
forward
like,
thinking at that time, but yeah. Now sort of normal.
Yeah.
But this meant you kind of had to like whip up some stuff of your own, right?
Yeah, so back in the day, you know, organic was pretty new in the world of spirits. There were a few companies that were making stuff that were getting the certification, and so we kind of used those as a base. Like, Rain Vodka was a huge one, and that was, like, the base for everything. Like, I made triple sec with it. We made, you know, try to make some our version of chartreuse with it. You know, anything that we couldn't kind of like infuse juniper berries into it because there wasn't an organic gin that we could find, or, you know, we had, I think, juniper harvest, it was called. Like, some of the products that were organic were horrible.
Not great.
They weren't great. But so we kind of still had to work within those confines. So it was a little bit difficult, but also, like, I feel like when you know, have like boundaries, you can be more creative. So yeah, I was making a lot
agree,
of stuff,
by the way.
Yeah, you kind of need them. You know, it kind of forces you to think about things in a different way. So that was a very cool experience for me, and I got to really dive into the whole principles behind organics and biodynamics. And I liked a lot of aspects of it. In reality, it doesn't work for a small companies. You know, to get certification, people don't really care. It's kind of a waste of the 20 right. grand or whatever.
Exactly. It's a waste of funding. It should be the other way around.
Yeah, like, you know, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, things like not carrying something like, you know, a mezcal that's been being made for the same way for fucking thousands of years. Like, that's as organic as it's going to get.
And right.
Because they don't give a shit or have the money to pay,
to be certified.
The USDA to certify them, you know. So, you know, that kind of... At some point, I kind of had to part ways with that program. But while I was there, I was lucky enough to go to the Bar 5 Day, which Heather thinks is the meal ticket.
I said golden ticket.
Golden ticket.
Yeah. I think everyone who goes through that program comes out the other side smelling like a rose.
You know what it is? That program is grueling and brutal no matter how much you know or think you know. And it's very humbling to realize in an industry like this that there's still shit that you don't know and that other people... can teach you.
I think that's what keeps me going in this industry.
Yeah. Constantly learning.
I think you need it.
Constantly learning. Like, and I want to be humbled.
Yeah, man. I want to as well. I just can't afford to go get humbled by those guys.
Yeah, well, exactly. Well, you know,
I can afford it. I can't also afford taking the week off. Like, it's a fucking expense, man.
Look, at the time, this is 2008. Like, back then, you couldn't do the shit yourself. Now you can do it. If you are motivated, you can find out all this information on your own, which we didn't. This shit wasn't on Wikipedia. You couldn't just go look up what's Campari. Like,
yeah, but at the same time, it's different because, like, like learning it on your own, like reading a book or checking it out online, it's like that's way different. Like, you can do the same thing with bartending.
Yeah, you know? But the thing is,
it's better to learn from another human being,
right?
Or a group of
experience,
human
you know, obviously, yeah, of course, or a group of people because people will give you different facets and things and teach you to kind of think about things and. Whole other ways. And like tasting, we were doing blind tastings and like throwing, you know, profile notes out like in my bar class was very cool because, you know, the way that I talked about spirits was the way that I learned to talk about wine, which is like thinking, you know, close your eyes, think of something that you relate to when you taste it and then figure out why you relate to that specific thing. For me, like smell and taste has a lot of like memory, obviously, I think for everybody, brings back a lot of memory. So I kind of use that when I kind of do my tasting notes.
Of course.
And hearing, like, other people's things and the way that, like, group mentality works. Because the second you say, like, erasers, everybody's like, erase, yeah, it's like an eraser. This definitely smells like an eraser. You're like, you know, or, like, this tastes like bones, like dinosaur minerals. And you're like, you don't, what the fuck? Huh? It does, though. Like, it kind of does taste like what I think a pterodactyl bone would taste like.
It's like licking a river rock or whatever.
You're like...
No, I mean, like, we used to do this thing, and I used to work at this place called Linnell's in Red Hook, and...
I remember.
Oh, yeah, man.
I knew you then.
So, with my really good friends, I'm still very good friends with them, in a way, like, in the same way that, so that you were talking about, like, the five-day, it's like, you make these connections and friends and stuff.
Should last forever.
Ian Wolf and Amanda Womack. Amanda Womack works for Anchor Distilling nowadays, and Ian is he's quite the troubadour. He's a writer. What was really cool was like, just like some days at the wine and spirit shop at Linnell's, we would come up with a random descriptor for like a flavor or scent for like. Just a random descriptor for like a wine that we're displaying that day. And sometimes it'd be like, yeah, it's kind of like, you know, swirl the glass. And you're like, it's kind of like, it's kind of haunted. It's kind of ghostly, right?
But like, see if you can get people to go down the road with you.
And dude, but the thing is, like, it came from an actual place where, like, damn, this shit. They're like fucking ghosts in this bottle, man. Like,
you know, there's spirits in here.
But you actually like believe it, and then you're like, "Fuck, man, let's see if anyone else thinks that too." And like, man, this one seems kind of like disgruntled. Like, it's like we popped this bottle open before it was ready to like to be. Yeah. It's like, it's, you know, like, but I, you know, the, I really
disgruntled. I love that. You disturbed it.
One the one that broke. Where someone finally was like, "You guys are full of shit." I said, "Fashion."
Menstrual blood.
I said, "Fashion forward."
This wine.
It's like very fashion forward, and they're like, "Bullshit." But you know what? Actually, like,
hey,
but,
they called your bullshit. That never happens. So.
Exactly. Yeah. But the thing is, like, when you're talking in a group setting, like,
and if you're the authority,
there's a vocabulary that you might not have until you hear it from someone else.
Oh God, there are tasting notes that I heard from people there that like. I, you know, I love and I still like they still come to me and I'm like so thankful. I'm like Bazooka Joe, like who would have known? But Chairman's Spice tastes exactly like that, like smells exactly like it. And it's confection sugar and that like dustiness. And like you get, you know, you kind of get how they got there, but it's like genius. And I don't know who said that note. Maybe it was me, but
sure.
I'm going to take credit for it. But, you know, things like that. So
you got to go through Bar 5 Day.
I got to go through Bar 5 Day. Which was awesome, you know. And from working at an organic bar at the time, I hadn't really been around real bottles of liquor in a while, like you know, normal things. So I was actually pretty bad. I think I failed my practical my practical test because I just didn't even know what like a Cointreau bottle looked like at the time. Like it had been.
Oh, sure.
So
you just had no like bottle recognition.
I had no reference, and yeah, and I got the Elder Groff as my judge, and I was trying to crack jokes with him. Like there was another girl in the class, and there was only one other girl in the class, and she got Willie Shine as her judge, and I was like so mad because she was like. They were like touching art. They were like, oh, like he was like joking with her. It was great. And I like was trying to talk to Dale, and I'm like, so like, how about them like, sour apple?
And
like,
Dale was disgruntled,
just stone face, like face unmoving face, just like. And now you have 2.5 minutes. Like he's so like yeah, he's just done. Like, all right, like
I got a sandwich waiting over there.
Yeah, so. That was, you know, very, again, humbling, and I had some amazing people in my class with me. You know, the people that I have, Kento was in my class, Giuseppe was in my class, John Lemaire.
Kento Goto, Giuseppe Gonzalez, John yeah, Lemaire.
John Lemaire.
Amazing. Lineup.
Robert Cooper. I think Robert Simonson was in my class even.
Wow.
Like, there were some really, I mean, everybody's gone on to do really amazing things and, like, open up cool spots, and so that's definitely like a connect. I feel like a cool connection that we all had and still have. You know, running into them at Tales the following year after my bar class, when I like the first year I went, I didn't know anybody to going and having all these recognizable faces and kind of these pioneers in the industry was definitely like
what year was that? I'm sorry,
the class I took was in 2008, yeah. So I believe it was shortly after then. Tales was shortly after that. So that I went to.
Amazing.
So, yeah. So, yeah, just, you know, being in a crowded room at Tales of the Cocktail at a party. Now, crowded, when I say crowded, I'm talking like one hotel room because there were only like 400 people there.
Yeah.
Not like now where there's, what, 20,000?
Something like that.
But being in a crowded room like that and having, you know, like Paul Picoult be like, hey, there's the good taster. It was like, holy shit, like, yeah, everybody buy me drinks, like, right. I'll tell you what they taste like. No,
yeah,
like,
we're gonna take a quick break. Cool. Hear from our sponsors. Hmm. And then we'll come back and keep
drink
talking.
Some of that,
and yeah, why not. Yeah. And then we'll come back and talk more with Tanya Guffey about what happened after Bar 5 Day.
Do it.
Hi, I'm Dave Arnold, the host of Cooking Issues on the Heritage Radio Network. We all know and love Chinese takeout dishes like General Tso's chicken and egg rolls, but here's the thing. Even though we call it Chinese food, it's not like the food you'd find in China. What's the story behind this cuisine, and how did it become so popular that you can find a Chinese-American restaurant in nearly every town in the country? The answers may surprise you. Visit the Museum of Food and Drink in Brooklyn and see our newest exhibition, Chow, Making the Chinese-American Restaurant. Chow engages visitors with compelling accounts of how Chinese immigrants overcame racism and created Chinese-American cuisine. Discover the science behind the flavors of your favorite takeout dishes, feast on rotating tastings developed by the country's most talented Chinese-American chefs, and try your hand at writing your own fortune, which will be baked into actual cookies by a 1,500-pound fortune cooking machine. What better way to learn, connect, and eat? You can visit Chow at the Museum of Food and Drink on Fridays through Sundays from noon to 6. Tickets and more information can be found at mofad.org.
Hi, I'm Akiko Katayama, host of Japan Eats on Heritage Radio Network, where you can discover the latest topics and deepest knowledge of Japanese food culture with my cool guests. Tune in on Mondays at 3 p.m. to hear about topics like the science behind Japanese dashi, a rare conversation with a traditional sake brewer or sushi master, famously beautiful and obsessive Japanese coffee culture, secret recipes of ramen, how to make Japanese-style pickles, and much, much more. Please support my show and all of Heritage Radio Network's programming. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to donate. Thank you so much. I hope to see you on Japan Eats.
And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. And we have Tanya Guffey in the studio today.
And Charlie Parker. He's just being quiet.
And Charlie. Yeah. He's
Charlie.
We call him Charlie Manhattan.
Yeah, man.
Old Maraschino Manhattan Charlie himself.
Now it's out there for the world to know.
It's not yet. If you want it to
he
be.
He made a Carroll Gardens cocktail, but he forgot to put the Nardini Amaro in it.
So while we're off listening to our sponsors, Charlie revealed that he made a Manhattan for Dale. It wasn't Bar 5 Day, though, because you're about to take that.
Right. So it was for the advanced class in Austin.
Bar Smarts Advanced. Yeah. And you made Dale a Manhattan, but you fucking bombed it.
Yeah, fucking bombed it. It was horrible.
By putting Marisky Nut in there.
But I'm telling you, everybody fucks up. I mean,
and so now in back home in Texas, everybody colloquially calls you Charlie Manhattan.
Charlie Manhattan. I can't get rid of it. Anywhere in Austin or San Antonio, if I can't walk into a place and they'll not know that.
Charlie Manhattan.
Now I guess it's the whole world, but that's all
fuck
right.
Fuck him, man.
Charlie Manhattan, do you know Frankie Cocktail? You guys should hang out.
We go way back.
You guys are bros.
Oh, God.
Okay, so, Tanya, you finished 5 Day.
I did. I got out alive.
And
barely.
Then what happened?
Let's see. Well, and then, so then Tales happened, and you know, I met some people that were awesome. I met Tom during my Bar 5 Day, Tom Chadwick, owner of Dram, currently.
Tim Chadmire.
Dadwick. Lovingly refer to him. Because he corrals the Muppets and Misfits that have always been Dram. So I met him.
The worms.
Call them worms with loving endearment. So I met Tom there at Bar 5 Day. He was sitting next to me. We were making margaritas. I think I was probably irritating him as usual, just be chatty. And he kind of was like very, you know, like coy about things that he was doing. I asked him where he was working, what he was doing. And he's like, I have like projects happening. Like, yeah. I'm like working on this thing in Brooklyn. It's like in Williamsburg. And like, he was running supper clubs out of the Dram space.
Cool.
And a music practice space, which is what Dram is attached to, the whole building.
I've smoked a lot of cigarettes in that back hallway.
It's cigarettes.
Jazz cigarettes.
Jazz.
But he was doing a lot of cool stuff, and he was working happy hour at the Bushwick Country Club and making cocktails there, which was crazy.
That was amazing. I would go there. I lived not far from Bushwick Country Club at that time, and I would go there, and he would be literally loading in crates.
With a doctor bag.
Everything. Like, everything. He brought fucking glassware, because Bushwick Country Club's got fucking shot glasses and...
Yeah, we don't do glassware.
That's all they got. Yeah. So he would have coupe glasses and Manhattan glasses, and he'd load in, and it was just for like 3 hours.
It was for 3 hours on like a Tuesday. Like,
yeah, every
you know,
Tuesday. It was Tuesdays.
It was awesome.
But it was great.
And, you know, it was cool because the neighborhood, you know, other than Huckleberry Bar, which I think was one of the first, Huckleberry and the Richardson, I want to say, in our neighborhood,
were
the kind of pioneers of anything cocktail-y or fresh juice,
yeah,
even
before Maison Premier.
You know, we were before Maison, but Dram was before Maison.
Yeah.
But you know, Dram feels like it was pioneering stuff, but stuff did exist before. You know, there are 7.5 years at Dram. 2010 we opened. So
right.
So he was doing, you know, he was doing a lot of stuff. He really was, and he was, you know, for some reason I somehow charmed him at the end of the Bar 5 Day to be my friend and loop me in on like what was going on, and he ended up hiring me when Dram officially opened, with a cast of, you know, people that were way more talented than me, but like some of the best bartenders in New York at the
time. So on that note,
before you jump, we're coming up on Tales of the Cocktail again this year, but I recall when Dram opened, they were shortlisted for Best New Cocktail Bar, right?
Yeah, we were up for Best New Cocktail Bar.
We lost to Black Pearl, right? Australia?
No, it was. I want to say it was.
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. It was called like Apothecary. It wasn't.
But whatever.
That.
It's like
it was something.
You
that,
guys cracked right out of the gate and got some recognition for this tiny little amazing bar in, at that time, dumpy old Williamsburg, which is now like the fucking
Apple Store,
right?
Yeah,
Whole Foods Apple Store. There was none of that. Like, there was nothing on our. We were on South 4th Street. There was nothing on that block for a long time. When Pies and Thighs opened, we were like, rejoice! There's somebody here with us. Like, there's somewhere to eat.
Like, we're no longer an island.
Yeah. So you know, Tom has always had a lot of foresight and kind of been on one of the cool kids. So. He was smart, and he enlisted a really great opening staff, and I think that really just created this awesome culture of this really talented bar staff that taught the barbacks, you know,
You guys give a shit.
We give and promote from within, and you know the barbacking. You know, there was we had female lesbian barbacks on our staff. Like we were definitely like a very friendly to everything and everyone, and that kind of wasn't happening. Girls weren't behind the bar that much, definitely not in a barback capacity, which was, I think, something that, you know, was really important to start happening. And, you know, we had people like, Jason Luttrell, who's teaching, Jeremy Ortel was a barback, Jeff Hazel was a barback, you know, pretty much every bartender on our staff has been a barback at one point. Yeah. And now,
so many of those folks go on to crush.
I mean, they're killing it, you know, and that's kind of a system that was put into play of like self-promotion, promoting your friend, you know, helping the younger generation or, you know, the newer generation to kind of understand how all of it works. And you know, Tom never has been like a person who's garnered for press or anything like that. So he really has always let everybody on his staff kind of shine, and he's kind of stayed in the back. I think a lot of people, when you say Dram, wouldn't know that, you know who the owner is necessarily, because he very much has kind of been that person that's kind of pushed, especially for my career. I think for my career, especially like when I took over the program there, which was, I guess, probably about 4 or 5 years, 4.5 years ago. He was like, go get it. Like, do your thing. Do the menu. I trust you, you know.
He's a really amazing dude, and it sounds like you...
I know. It was just my last shift, and I don't want to, like, get teary or anything, but, like,
You know, like, he's always been that chill fucking dude. And
yeah, man.
Yeah, and... it's been great, and I wish him all the best in the future. I mean, like, the place is still going strong.
Yeah, you know? It's awesome.
Could you tell me, since you've been in this for, like, the last decade, for, like, some of our listeners out there, like, some of the newer bartenders, or even, shit, man, for us, because we're always learning, right? Like we said before.
Right.
What would be, like, give us, like, one do and one don't. Like, or maybe a couple, like, that you've, like, realized.
I mean, I guess, you know, to me, like, humility is a big do. You know, don't act like you know everything. It's, don't ever be, you know, that person that can't just be quiet and learn and listen. Like, even if you know or think you know what you're talking about, like, somebody might have something that's important to tell you. So you should definitely listen to it. I think, too, like, I always, like, my kind of, like, mantra always is, like, I really, like, know your classics, like, know the backbone of cocktails. To me, that's a huge part of it. I think I always say, like...
like, definitely know what's in a Manhattan.
Like, definitely know.
don't fucking drop the ball on a Manhattan for Dale to grow.
Yeah. You know, it's like, I kind of compare bartending to cooking a lot in like... you know, don't try to sous vide an egg when you can't make a proper omelet. Like, know how to do the things that you're supposed to do before you start, like, infusing and fucking smoking shit and,
smoking,
you know.
Shit.
Well, you know, the molecular stuff. It's very cool, but, like, don't, you know.
Can't cook rice, can't carve ice. Like, if you can't do something basic, why are you doing something extravagant?
And, you know, don't be afraid to start at the bottom and kind of, you know, the only person you're cheating is yourself if you're trying to scam your way ahead of, you know, what you should learn. Like,
well, I think that goes also, I mean, you've done some brand work as well.
Nope.
I mean, like, well, like, events and stuff. I mean, like,
yes, obviously,
we've done some stuff together in the past. But, like, to me, it's like that is a testament to a lot of new bartenders. They try to jump right into brand work.
And it's like,
you don't know. First of all, if you can't fucking... let's be honest here. We're in the trust tree here, man.
The tree of trust.
In the speakeasy, man. We're speaking easy. Thing is, man, like, a lot of, like, new bartenders jump into brand work, and
it's ridiculous.
Honest, it's like, don't know how to drink, and that, unfortunately, is a huge part of that job. And
it's huge.
Like, and a lot of youngsters, like, get into brand work.
immediately.
And it's like, they're like, yeah, my job is to party all the time. Like, then they fucking crash and burn.
Yeah.
But I think that's something like, I mean, like,
look, I've been in the industry for 15 years. I've been tending bar and I've never had a brand job. And that doesn't, you know, but, mean that I'm not ready. You know, at some point I will probably. Because,
but we also probably have the most, like,
we probably have the most swag
of Fernet tattoos.
Tattoo itch, yeah.
Yes.
Look, unofficially, I work for a few brands that I love. I unofficially drink a lot of things. Like,
yeah.
But, you know, I think jumping into that is something that, you know, is if you haven't done costing, if you don't know how to price out a drink, if you don't have the capacity to self-manage, work a shift on a Sunday with tons of industry and not get hammered and can still do your numbers, like, these are things that you need to, like, successfully exist as a brand person, I think. And
or just as a bartender in general. I mean, I think this is a conversation that we've had with other guests on the show, too. Really, yeah. What we're kind of dancing around is the idea that no longer is bartending what you do to get through college. This is a career. You've been doing it for 15 years. Yeah. I've been doing it for that long as well.
And you know, your body physically can't necessarily handle doing it for that much longer. I'm like, you know, after a 5-hour shift, my back is done. Like,
right.
And like, you know, recognition shift. Of that. But you know what?
I would love a five hour shift.
I know. Well, I keep going. I'm just saying, like, 5 hours into it.
Okay.
Gotcha. I'm like, get off your feet. But that's why, like, hey, kids, if you're 1 year in, like, keep going because you might never be able to do it again. Like,
right.
And
there's absolutely like longevity in this.
In this industry, but like, pay again, like, work your way there.
You have to,
like,
be smart when and responsible you're, yeah. about it.
When you're, you know, already.
And it's fun, obviously, it is fun.
It's great.
You know, but like, you have to be responsible.
If you're responsible, it's great, and it's a lot, your longevity in this industry is a lot longer if you're smart about it. You know, you have your whole life to go work for a brand. Like,
I mean, like we were talking about before, Del DeGraff. I mean, dude.
He's got a good,
the guy's not out partying every fucking night, you know. The guy's made a career out of doing what he does, and he's an inspiration and a mentor to all of us, and he's still going, you know.
Yeah.
Fucking Gary Regan, there's a fucking bar spoon made
with his finger.
A mold of his finger.
I was like, how many buttholes is that finger mold going to go into? Probably not a lot.
A lot. No,
absolutely.
You know, it came in mind.
I mean,
how many minds are going to think about
that? Wait, you say how many is it going to go into, or how many has it?
Has it already been into?
Man, yeah. The real one or the mold? Anyway, so we're going to come out with a muddler next.
Oh, hey, okay. At my 2008 Tales, I was touting. I was like, I'm going to find somebody to pick this up. Hot pink, sparkly, electric, buzzing, self-muddling muddler.
It's just, it already
muddler.
Exists.
Yeah, muddler.
Yeah, it's called a dildo.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
but I mean, it's genius, you know.
Yeah,
the face on it. The Guffy perfect, muddler.
The perfect muddle.
Yeah, muddle's just the right amount.
Well, this has been great.
Yeah, we're twisting off down the road. But I think
I have a prototype.
I think it's you know, you brought up Dale, and I just happened to see him the other day. He was at the USBG meeting on Monday. I talked to him about you, by the way, Charlie.
At the shanty,
Charlie Manhattan. But he's got his. You know, I'm just out of my sling, but he's got his hand all managed up because he's got carpal tunnel. He just had to have surgery. Mm-hmm. It went successfully, but he's. You know what I mean? Like, this is just shit that happens in our field. Like, and we have to be prepared for and understand that we're going a long way. We're not just again getting through college by slinging some beers somewhere. We're somewhat respectable community at this point. I want to keep us that way.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing
once
is,
we get health insurance and when our hips go out and our backs break and our shoulders pop out, like, you know, and we're out of work for weeks, and, you know, luckily we have such a cool community that takes care of a lot of those people.
You know, there are a lot of bars nowadays in New York City. They have a pool that they'll throw, like, you know, a percentage of their tips every shift into, like, a pool that's, like, kind of like the security
little slush
blanket.
Bond, yeah.
Yeah. But also, you know, like, Brooklyn Gin has yoga that's free for the industry every Tuesday at 1 o'clock, you know, and like that kind of stuff. That's cool. I mean, like, the thing is, like, that's kind of when you know that the industry has, like, reached a point where it's like, all right, this is a thing. This is not just like getting through school, whatever, college. It's a thing.
It can be getting through college, like, and there's totally bars for that, and I think we shouldn't discredit.
No, not at all.
You know, like, not everybody needs to be, like, fucking Tony Master Mixologist or whatever. Like, you can, you know, you can just bartend. Like, you can just be super happy. Like, it's...
Serve people, not drinks.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know? Like, exactly. There's no shame, you know, like, there's no shame, like,
yeah,
you know, any what of it. Tiny, this has been really fucking awesome having you on the show today.
Thank overdue you. By the way,
sorry I talk so much.
No,
it's a talk show.
It's a talk show. It's called the Speak
Easy. That's how we do it.
It's easy to talk to you guys.
Yeah, man. It's, you know, outside of just, like, being really excited to have you on the show, it's been really nice to have you as a friend for
in our lives.
So long, man. It's been really cool.
Well, before you, it sounds like you're wrapping up. Before you wrap up, like, what's next? You left Dram.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
I know. I did. So, there's a few things I did. I've been working on a project that's opening in the Standard East Village. I'm consulting on a bar menu for them. It's going to be called Narc Bar. We're opening. Slated for the 30th of June.
Narc Bar.
It sounds pretty cool. So it's happening in the basically, I don't know if you've ever been there, but Narcissa is the restaurant within the Standard East.
Narcissa.
So Narc. So they cut a part out of what was the Narcissa open kitchen, and they've turned it into this amazing, like, super open, airy, kind of looks like a, you know, Key West drug den in a really, like, hot and sexy way. So that's going to be, it's pretty rad.
It's basically right across the street from me too.
And it's right, but yeah, exactly. It's like, I can see Koo. I spent a lot of time there recently. But very super focused, a lot of fresh juice, very clean, despite the drug inference name. A little cheeky in that way. So that's opening. So I've been kind of busy with that, and then I'm just, like, gonna kind of leisure for a little bit. Oh my gosh, man. You know,
just, you deserve it. You're fucking, you're a grinder.
Thanks. It's weird.
I've seen you behind bars. You are a grinder.
Yeah.
But also, you're getting married to Chef Jackson Stamper.
It's true.
I botched it last week. I called him the sous chef. I thought he was the sous chef. Wasn't he? He was.
So, well,
I didn't realize he climbed
now
the ladder.
Now he has his own sous chef. It's crazy.
All right, Jackson. He's in Panama.
Calm down. I know. He's in Panama consulting on a project of himself. So, you know, he's beaching it up. Probably not. He's probably in the kitchen.
Right.
Slaving away. But, so that's, I'm getting married in October. A little time to plan a wedding. You know, those things happen.
Take that break. It's well-deserved.
Thank you.
So happy to have you on the show today.
Thanks for coming.
I'm going to give you the calendar like I always do at the end of the show. Next week, we got Kyle and Rachel Ford from the Ford Marketing Lab. The following week, last week I said it was going to be my team from Koo, but I don't think it is. We need to get together and talk, but I think it's going to be the team from Diamond Reef.
What?
Yeah. Cha-ching. Yeah.
But we got to talk to them and see if they can make it out here. Maybe they'll bring us a penicillin. following week, looks like we got Chris Bidbeat and Jamie. I never can remember Jamie's last name. Bolton and Watt. They're going to come on and talk about the things that in
live. I love how this is live radio, and you're just like, I don't know.
Yeah, no, we'll see.
That's proof that this is live radio.
Yeah, I'm getting. You know, sometimes the calendar changes, people. Anyway. I'm going to get out of here and go to Koo tonight. Porco Lounge is in town from Cleveland. Those guys kill it. Stefan Watts and his whole team are going to make
tiki. You're wearing the shirt.
I'm wearing the shirt. They're going to make tiki drinks tonight at Koo for charity. I bought these guys don't know it. If they're listening to the show, I'm blowing the surprise. I bought them a bottle of 1972 Fernet Branca that's 90 proof. Because, get a load of this. Their bar in Cleveland is the number one purchaser of Fernet Branca in the Midwest region. They are not the number one seller. They drink so much Fernet Branca.
Yeah, well, that's pretty.
Because it's me and Damon.
That's obvious. Yeah, because we work there.
Yeah, exactly. So that's going to be a ton of fun. And then just a random weird shout out. It's Dawn Heideman, who is the secretary of USBG in New York City. It's her birthday today.
Woo!
And she's working. But I just told her, I'd tell her happy birthday on the
Very cool.
Anyway, that's all I got. What do you got?
Yeah, man. Well, actually, for everyone in the Colorado area, this coming weekend, is Stranahan Whiskey. They're doing their Cassidy Whiskey Fest over this weekend. It's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I'm going to be out there with a bunch of other people from New York.
Drinking whiskey. Rambling man these days.
Dude, whatever, Jesus. Man.
That's great. I love it.
Fuck stationary hanging man. Like, let's fucking let's hit the road, man.
On the move.
Yeah, man. So, yeah, we're going to be out there. Definitely check it out. You can go to Stranahan's website and check it out. The Cassidy weekend is going to be really fucking cool. It's kind of based around Denver. We're going to do some like horseback riding and whiskey drinking and hiking and just, you know, like whiskey stuff, man.
Living like a cowboy.
That's what I do, man.
Yeah, I love it. I fucking love it. Vogue cowboy. All right, I guess that wraps up this week's episode. I want to say thanks again to Charlie Manhattan for sitting in. All the way up from Texas.
Yeah, we'll have to get you on the actual microphone next time.
Yeah, yeah. You're never going to live this down.
Never.
I've solidified that for you.
Oh, breakfast tacos from Kura's.
Dude, I'll bring the best breakfast
tacos. And some mango margaritas from Wero's.
And Topo Chico.
And Topo Chico.
I thought y'all had that up here.
No, man.
Dude, I got a hookup. Right across the street from my bar, Grand Army, there's a spot.
That has Topo Chico.
Not anymore.
It's like it's underground it Topo Chico.
So I know where I'm going. It's like
infiltrated. Yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah, tune in to Heritage Radio Network for hundreds of shows just like this one. Maybe thousands.
Thousands, probably.
Thousands.
Tens of thousands.
Wow, the number gets
hundreds
higher.
Of thousands.
Man, millions.
Millions.
It's a lot of shows. You can also go to our website and click on the Beating Heart and donate. Keep us on the air. This is a public radio, so we need your money to stay on the air. And loved having you listen to us today. Thanks so much, guys. Cheers.
Cheers.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.